How are we saved? Exactly the same way. Abraham is looking forward to a Messiah yet to come, didn't know his name. That's why a lot of Bible versions translate it accredited to righteousness. Abraham received salvation on credit. What is credit? Y'all use credit cards? We love credit cards. In the States, we love credit cards. Why is that? We get goodies now and payment later. So what did Abraham get? He got a goodie, salvation, but the payment wouldn't come until the death of Christ 2,000 years later. So Abraham's looking forward to a Messiah that would come. We're saved the same way. We're just looking backward. And we know his name. But Abraham is saved by faith alone. How are we saved? By faith alone. So in that sense, we are the seed of Abraham. That's all it's saying. We're simply his spiritual seed. Beyond that, if this passage were to say that we are now Israel, it couldn't just say we are the seed of Abraham, because Ishmael's descendants, are they not the seed of Abraham too? Now go over and tell those people in the Middle East that they're Jewish and see what kind of reaction you get. They won't be very happy with you. To be a seed of to be Jewish, you can't just be a seed of Abraham. You have to be a seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's what makes you Jewish. This passage never says we're the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, does it? It just says we're the seed of Abraham. And even then, it's saying we are his spiritual offspring or spiritual lineage. And if you understand it from that way, the whole argument that the amillennialist uses just evaporates. Let me take you to a fifth argument that amillennialists use quite frequently. And what they'll say is this: Israel's restoration is never mentioned in the New Testament. And they'll say this over and over again, and I'll show you some quotes where they say this. Matter of fact, let me give you one. This is Bruce Waltke, a brilliant Hebrew scholar. But sadly, he drifted into amillennialism. He had to leave the faculty at Dallas Seminary and so forth. And he's got some good stuff on Proverbs and things, but his eschatology is very confused. He says, not one clear New Testament passage mentions the restoration of Israel as a political nation or predicts an earthly reign of Christ before his final appearing. None depicts the consummate glory of Christ as an earthly king. Ruling over the restored nation of Israel, the silence is deafening. That's what he says. Gary DeMar, a preterist and replacement theologian, writes, where is this super sign found in the Bible? Not in the New Testament. There's not a single verse in the entire New Testament that says anything about Israel becoming a nation again. Nothing prophetic in the New Testament depends on Israel becoming a nation again. If Israel becoming a nation again is such a significant sign, then why doesn't the New Testament specifically mention it? Now, I know you're thinking of passages, but let's not do that. Let's pretend that what these gentlemen are saying is true. It's not true, as I'll show you in a minute. But let's pretend it's true that the restoration of Israel really isn't mentioned in the New Testament. The answer to that is, so what? That's what you call an argument from silence. It's a logical fallacy, where you're assuming silence about something is the same thing as a cancellation. For example, I teach at a Bible college, and I have a syllabus that I pass out to the students. And it has a date for the final exam there, for the students to know when the final exam is coming. And let's say I go through the whole semester, and I never mention the final exam. And a student says, you know what, we don't have to take the final exam. Well, why not? Well, you never mentioned it in class. Well, doesn't matter. It's still in the syllabus, isn't it? Me not mentioning something is not the same thing as a cancellation, is it? Now, if I were to come out and overtly say the final exam is canceled, then the student would have a point. But see, they're assuming that lack of speaking on something is the same thing as a cancellation. And that's what we would call a logical fallacy. I'll hand it to Bruce Waltke and Gary DeMar that the New Testament is not as prominent as the Old in mentioning the restoration of Israel, but show me one passage anywhere where God says Israel's program is canceled. They're assuming that a lack of mention of something is the same thing as a cancellation, and that is a logical fallacy called an argument from silence. Having said all that, I don't think Bruce Waltke or Gary DeMar are even accurate in what they're saying. It is true that Israel's restoration is not as frequently mentioned in the New Testament as it is in the Old Testament, but why would it have to be? Why do I need two Old Testaments? I mean, if the New Testament just came along and repeated everything in the Old Testament, then I wouldn't need the Old Testament. So, the reason that Israel's restoration is not as frequently mentioned in the New Testament is because who is the center of salvation history in the New Testament? It is no longer Israel, but the church. The church has no description in the Old Testament. The church has no revelation concerning how its leaders are to be picked, what its purpose is. That's why the New Testament is talking about the church, something that had never been revealed. So, it is true that the New Testament is not as prominent as the Old in speaking about the restoration of Israel, but there's a reason for that, and that's because Israel's program has already been clearly laid out in the Old Testament, and why does God have to come along and repeat something for it to be true? God is working on something else that has never been revealed, which is the church. And who came up with this rule that God has to say something twice for it to be valid? That's like Eve, you know, saying, or Adam and Eve complaining to God when they ate of the forbidden tree and plunged the human race into sin and saying to God, well, God, you only told us one time to stay away from the tree of knowledge. I mean, if you should have at least told us twice. I mean, the whole reasoning process, you know, just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, having said all that, I know what many of you are thinking, and you're right. The New Testament does mention the restoration of Israel, does it not? Here are a series of verses. Israel's restoration is not as prominent in the New Testament as it is in the Old, but it is mentioned. Notice Luke 21:24. Is Luke in the New Testament? I think it is, last time I checked. Luke 21:24 says, "And they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led away into captivity to all the nations. Jerusalem will be trodden down by the feet of the Gentiles." What's the next word? Until. Wow. The times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. What does that mean? Until means the times of the Gentiles is not going to last forever, is it? The word until implies an end of the times of the Gentiles and a restoration of the Jewish people. Notice Matthew 19 and verse 28. Is Matthew in the New Testament? I think it is. Matthew 19 verse 28. What does it say there? "Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, you have followed me in the regeneration when the Son of Man will sit on his throne, and you shall sit upon the 12 thrones, judging the 12. What's the next word? Tribes of Israel. The apostles are going to sit on 12 thrones over the 12 tribes of Israel. That's a millennial passage. It's in the New Testament. See, what these guys are saying is not even accurate. Take a look at Matthew 23, verses 38 through 39. Matthew 23, verses 38 through 39. Really beginning at verse 37. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." Who's speaking here? Jesus. Who's he talking to? Jerusalem or the unbelieving Pharisees. And what he's saying is, look, when I came the first time, I wanted to gather you.